This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Oof, what a busy evening. My goodness me. Hey, got to work today with Old Norman. We're going to have a good time, have good conversations, good discussions, wrap up the week. Sip a shot, man, and go into the weekend. No. That's not how it's all going down. There's the matter there with Africa for Palestine and the former Chief Justice, Mogoeng. We will, of course, try and jump onto that, that story just briefly. In a few, actually. So we'll try and get into that. It all just happened, isn't it? You heard Nomusa there leading with it in that particular bulletin. And then there's the other matter of one minister of tourism here being a media release here to say that she distances herself from this particular statement. Who, of course, saw that much earlier. Just wanted to make sure that it is verified. It is in fact from her, and I'll just quickly read it for you in case you have seen it. Haven't seen it, rather, where it says, I've just been informed of a media alert issued by the presidency that apparently claims that I, Lindiwe N. Sisulu, retracted my original expression. I wish to categorically disown the statement in its entirety as a misrepresentation of the said meeting I had with the president. The president and I met on Wednesday at 9 p.m. at his house. In such a meeting, he shared his challenge with one aspect of the article on the judges. The president proposed an intermediary that would focus on the one line about the judges to resolve that. I awaited such to be communicated, which would do nothing to the entire article. Under no circumstances did I commit to any retraction or apology, since I stand by what I penned. The content of the president's statement in its current form is unfortunate, as it is not what we agreed on. In this regard, I wish to distance myself from such. I will, in the next 24 hours, issue a full statement. And signed off, Lindiwe N. Sisulu. All of that in one night. And that's the end of that that particular statement. I just thought, let me read that for those, of course, who would have missed it, and see how this particular story develops. All right, 10 after 10 o'clock here. Let's shift gears. Welcome my guest, Timinkosi Dlamini, who is the Economic Justice Lead at Oxfam SA. Now, you would have already perhaps heard discussions and conversations about how the wealthy, right, somehow in what has been a terrible period for the world, a pandemic, and all the difficulty that we've experienced, have found a way to just keep making money. Just keep making money and getting richer and richer, wealthier and wealthier. You would know, of course, Oxfam releases a global inequality report. And I think of, the many over the years, when you look at one, given the context of the last almost 2 years, you pay attention and wonder, well, what on earth is happening here? How is it that some just continue to amass wealth, and how many across the globe are further pushed deeper and deeper into poverty? That's just how unequal the world is. Timinkosi Dlamini, Economic Justice Lead at Oxfam SA, is my guest. Thank you very much for your time, Timinkosi. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, Tebe, and thanks for having us.
I think at no point, I think, would anybody forget about or perhaps disregard the gross levels of inequality in the world. It's just at a time like this, and just how how disgusting it is, really. It takes you aback that that even some of the world's worst disasters, or the worst time for really so many people in the world, just happens to be a great time for the few in the world.
Yes, it is a great time indeed. The report that we have released, Inequality Kills, makes it clear that something needs to be done really about obscene wealth that very few people in the world are accumulating, whilst the 99% of the population is being pushed increasingly into poverty. It wouldn't be a problem at all if these 10 men or some of those billionaires of the world were just making the world because they were innovative, they were coming up with things that were out of this world, really, that they were selling to the general population. Mm-hmm. However, the report is clear that this is a result of an assault upon the laws, the regulations, and the systems that have always been in place to protect the common person from those that would exploit them. So as an example, what we have seen over time is that when we talk to labor rights, there has been a significant pushback from the wealthy, so that more and more people are being moved into precarious jobs as compared to secured jobs that pay a proper living wage. The same thing with the land rights. Most people are being pushed away from the land, and the people with money are taking over the land. When we talk about some of the industries that are there, the factories, the farms, the ones that were working throughout lockdown in order to produce food, as an example, that's where you find that farm workers are being paid poverty wages, and they are not allowed to mobilize and unionize. So they are always on life support, if you like, because no one is there to defend them. The government as well are suffering because they are barely collecting enough tax to keep the lights on. Hence, most governments in Africa and sub-Saharan Africa are talking about austerity measures that needs to be implemented.
Let's talk a bit more, Tim, because about the data that you use for this report, and to your last point there about not being able to, or governments not being able to collect enough tax, or you know, is also a function of people with a lot of money being able to either hide it, not declare it, or maybe just not easy to find, so that of course they can contribute a lot more than what they currently are to the tax base. So from the numbers that you use, you're still able to get to what is a staggering point, right? And has been the case over the years. How far off what might be the so-called real number or real figures do you think you are?
Yeah, I think when we speak to our methodology, it's really robust because we used the data that is prepared by Forbes, which we looked at the data in March 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic, and then September 2021, which was our cutoff point. Now, the Forbes rich list is clear as to what has happened to the wealth of the 10 individuals that we're talking about. Now, after looking at that, because we recognize that there is inflation that is involved, we then adjusted the figures for inflation. When we did adjust the figures for inflation, they still showed that the wealth of the 10 top billionaires in the world, who happen to be white males, more than doubled during the period of the COVID pandemic, whilst the 99%, the income of the 99% shrunk, and it forced over 160 million people into poverty. That was not all. We also find that inequality contributes to the death of at least one person every 4 seconds in the world. That is not surprising, because if you look at the level of vaccinations, especially when you look at the low-income world, you find that the level of vaccinations are still quite low at 9.4%, compared to a worldwide coverage of 60.2%. So it is clear that mostly low-income countries did not get the vaccines. At the same time, they were far off the hospitals. When they went to hospitals, there were absence of care workers, there was absence of essential drugs. So a lot of people died because of this inequality thing and the inability of the world to respond to the needs of society, as it were.
I have a conversation with Timikosi Dlamini, Economic Justice Lead at Oxfam SA. We are talking about gross inequality the world over, but the report that Oxfam, of course, releases there, looking at how poorer people, poorer nations are doing, and how the wealthy, in fact, have managed over the last period, this pandemic period, have also managed to amass a lot of wealth still. 0861-987-000 is where you can bring us to contribute to the discussion. We'll continue in a moment.
Nzile on 0861-987-000.
In conversation with Timikosi Dlamini, Economic Justice Lead at Oxfam SA. Timikosi, of course, the report usually coincides there with Davos, meeting of all sorts of powerful people to discuss the state of the world, and there are always conversations and debates about what happens there. What has, I suppose, a year like this meant for these sort of discussions there? So not having the usual visuals, if you will, the usual discussions about who's there, what's being discussed, and around that particular gathering. What has it meant for these issues? This issue about fighting inequality, and how, of course, many people are just not coming to the party. Many powerful people, many wealthy people, not coming to the party to contribute significantly to see an end to poverty and injustice?
Yes, certainly. We do think that the gathering of the rich and powerful in Davos, some of it online, creates an opportunity for those present to sit and really consider the state of the world. Hence, this report coinciding with the Davos gathering. We would like to put a few points forward towards those who attend the World Economic Forum, such as the need to take action to introduce wealth taxes, including capital gains tax, which will allow the government to collect more money in tax from the already rich people. We do estimate, for instance, that if only the wealth that they accumulated during the COVID pandemic, it could be taxed 99%, there would be a collection of around 814 billion rand, which would be enough to vaccinate everyone globally. And in the case of South Africa, we are saying, of course, that there needs to be efforts taken to tax more the new COVID industries that have emerged as a result of COVID, but also for the government to take action against those who were involved in COVID PPE corruption, so that some of that money can be taken back into the government system. By this, we're talking about those issues where you find that there was PPE fraud, there was corruption where schools were being fumigated during COVID when they were empty and there was no one going to school, PPE that was paid and never delivered, water tanks and food parcels meant for ordinary people, which landed in the hands of councillors' friends and their family. So there's really a lot of these measures that we are saying the powerful of the world need to take into account, so that when we can raise more money in South Africa, we can implement in 2022 the National Health Insurance Initiative, which will lead to universal health coverage, obviously, with South African being able to access health care, which is comprehensive and close to where they reside. Mm-hmm. So this becomes very, very important to us, because we realize that the universal health issues, the poverty issues, the hunger issues are really key, because still many South Africans go to bed without eating. And that is worrying in a country that is as affluent as South Africa because of this inequality situation.
Absolutely. For neighboring countries, for example, Tim Gos, I mean, you would know the conversations and the debates that that have happened in South Africa, and they're not new at all. One may just perhaps think that because they've been amplified some more recently, you would think that they knew. But of course, these are debates that have been had about the pressure that one feels, also given the socio-political conditions in countries such as Swaziland, such as Zimbabwe, elsewhere. And so when you're dealing with these issues, and then they are now compounded by a health crisis, compounded by a global or a first world community, if you will, that continues to other the developing world as well. It's just issue upon issue upon issue. And so how do we find our way back to you know, figuring out what to zone in on, what to focus on, begin to solve for that, and hope that the ripple effect will then address all of the other issues?
Yes, precisely. One of the things that we realize, obviously, that not only did inequality increase amongst people, it also increased between and among countries, which certainly means some of the governments that were already affluent and rich, they have become richer during the time of the pandemic. What we are saying, therefore, is that those governments should increase their allocation of overseas development assistance in order to assist those countries that are struggling, the list that you have just counted. Amongst the things that needs to be done is the question of climate adaptation, to look at the issue of climate change and how it is causing havoc in areas such as Ladysmith currently, where many have died, many have lost their homes. Mm. How, as countries, we can respond to create a safety net for those people who are affected by disasters from time to time. And these disasters, of course, include COVID, because during COVID, most of the people were already on the edge, were not making enough money. They were worst affected, such as your domestic workers, your informal traders, your waste pickers. Those people, because of lockdown and another lockdown, they were unable to get to work. They were unable to make a living. So what is required now is more action coming from the rich, including rich governments, to ensure that those people who fall through the cracks, they find something that is going to cushion them. Mm. And then we can assist them to go back to being liquid and being able to live normal lives.
Mm-hmm. And just hear from Mfundi in Pietermaritzburg. Mfundi, good evening.
No, my name is Mtunzi, not Mfundi.
Mtunzi, apologies, yes.
Yes. I'm a PhD student. I interviewed Mr. Dlamini, in fact. It's about illicit financial flows, of which they lead to inequality, poverty, and unemployment. And then there's a solution being presented by a lot of researchers, the minimum global tax, because we know that this financial flows, the main drivers are your multinationals. What is your take, Mr. Dlamini, on the minimum global tax that is being advocated by most of the research organizations? So that even if they evade our tax, but we recoup something, let's say we touch every MNC 15% across the board. Thank you very much. I'll listen on the radio.
Thank you, Mtunzi, for your question. Tim Gosi?
Yes, precisely. The research is showing us that Africa loses about 50 billion per annum in this so-called illicit financial flows.
Yeah.
That Mr. Mtunzi is well versed with. How this happens is through activities which are called base erosion and profit shifting, where especially multinational corporations, they shift most of their income. Even if they operate in South Africa, they will shift most of their income to low tax jurisdictions to take advantage of lower rates. Most of the people who are more prone to be involved in that kind of activity are the people in the 10 men who are the richest in the world. Mm. That is why they have doubled their wealth over the period of the pandemic, for instance, because most of the activity then moved to online purchases and all of those things. They made more money during that time. So this issue of a global minimum tax is a good proposal that is on the table, which will sort of slow down the movement of income across the globe in search for low tax jurisdiction or secrecy jurisdiction where people can easily hide their income, where you would find that there is no incentive for someone to move their income around in order to attract a lower tax rate because they would still suffer from the minimal global tax rate. So I agree with that proposal, Mthunzi. I think it's a great proposal. We should look at it as among those proposals that will go alongside our own around the wealth tax, which may be once off, and the permanent capital gains tax, mm-hmm. targeting assets and wealth.
Let's leave it there this evening. Tim Gosi, appreciate your time with us. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much,
Sarah.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Tim Gosi Dlamini, Economic Justice Lead at Oxfam South Africa. It's 10:30 now on Power Perspective. In a moment, I will be speaking to Africa for Palestine, just on that story about the former Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng, who's been ordered to apologize. We'll in fact be speaking to a board member, in fact, of Africa for Palestine in just a moment. I want to give you the third statement of the night. I kid you not. You think I'm making this up? When we started the show, I read the first statement from the presidency saying the Minister Sisulu retracted, right? And then just now, before I went to my conversation with Tim Mgosi, I read you a statement that was coming from the Minister of Tourism's office, distancing herself from that first statement that the presidency received, put out on Twitter to say that the minister retracts her comments from the opinion piece. Now, the presidency says the presidency stands by its statement earlier this evening, 20 January 2022, on a discussion between President Cyril Ramaphosa and Minister of Tourism Ms. Lindiwe Sisulu. The presidency has nothing to add to the earlier statement and signed off statement by the minister in the presidency, Monli Gongubele, issued by the presidency of the Republic of South Africa. I kid you not. I kid you not. Three. In one night. Listen, we still have another hour and a half or a bit. I wonder, maybe we get statement number four, maybe number five. What a mess. 0861-987-000 is where you're reaching us. Tweet me at Seven Gambule and PowerFM 987.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.